Welcome to the Mowgli Memories Podcast. Mowgli, the School of the Open, is a summer camp for boys on the shores of Newfound Lake in New Hampshire. It has been there since 1903. For 7 weeks, our boys are unplugged from the wired world and have the opportunity to discover themselves in a place that values both the boys and our natural world. Mowgli is a camp with a mission. It's a lot of fun, but it is fun with a goal. The mission of Camp Mowgli is to develop integrity, empathy, resilience, and leadership in young men. Listening to this podcast is all the evidence you will need to see that it succeeds in that mission. This podcast gives our alumni the chance to share their memories. It's also really fun to listen to their stories. Our host, Wayne King, came to Mowgli in 1963 at 6 years old. He was a scholarship kid who rose to be Mowgli's trip master in the late 70s and early 80s. He produces this podcast as a labor of love. If you would like to contribute to the cost of producing this podcast, you can go to mowgli.org and make a contribution. Or if you would like an original piece of art signed by Wayne, you can go to his gallery site waynedking.com and select any image from the Mowgli gallery, and the full purchase price will be donated to Mowgli in your name. Thanks.
Did you ever end up on Mr. Hart's porch for anything?
I don't think I did. I'm not sure.
Does that mean you were a good boy, or you were just successful and in your escapade?
I was reasonably good and certainly a fast talker. So.
That is the voice of John Mucad. John came to Mowgli in 1969 and was part of the iconic den of 1973. The Gehring brothers, Bruce McDonald, Jim Lynch, Gordon Marr, Charlie Foyer. This was just a great bunch of guys. And John fit right in. Here's my conversation with one and only John Mucad. John Mucad. Oh, nice to see you, my friend.
It's good to see you. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Yep, for an old man, you know. The days have gone by, haven't they?
How did this happen? Yeah.
Getting old ain't for the faint of heart.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's good to see you. One of my very favorite people from way back then.
A lot of favorite people at Mowgli.
Yeah, that's true. You know, you can't help it. It's just endemic.
Yeah, it was a nice place that way.
Yeah. Well, I'm speaking with my old friend, John Mucad. John, what year did you come to Mowgli?
Probably like 69, I think. 69. I think I was den of 73.
You were den of 73, okay.
And I came in Tumai, so... if we
you
can
know,
imagine
that. Something in my brain pinpoints the den of 1973 as being a pretty extraordinary bunch of kids. Do you remember some of the boys that were in your den?
Yeah, well, the Gehring twins and Charlie Foyer. And Bruce McDonald and Gordon Marr and Jay Fay. So yeah, it was a great bunch.
Yeah. And I remember that, you know, my memory may be playing tricks on me, but between leaving Panther in 72 and arriving back in Den, John Mucad became a very big guy. I mean,
I did. I think, yeah.
You know, you grew a ton that year because you came back to camp and everybody said, "Oh my God, this guy's going to be on the racing crew with these boys."
Right. Yeah. Well, I think the three or four of us, well, no more with Charlie. I think, you know, we had a bunch of people who were in Den 6 foot plus.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, pretty big.
Yeah, you're a big bunch of guys. What do you remember about your first year? What dorm were you in?
I started in Tumai.
In Tumai, okay.
I don't remember that much. I think I liked it in total, but I think there was some homesickness and, if finding my way, I had certainly never been away from home and from my parents.
Which was your home was where?
In Manhattan.
In Manhattan. Okay.
Yeah.
That's quite a transition to make.
Yeah. I mean, well, that was one of the things that made Mowgli great for me because I really was a city kid. So it was a good change of pace each summer to be in New Hampshire and at the school of the outdoor, of the open.
Wow. But going from, you know, living right in Manhattan to Mowgli it had to have been a bit of a shock.
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, I think that in the end was really a great thing about it. But yes, it was more unfamiliar to me. A lot of camp was more unfamiliar to me initially than it, mm-hmm. probably a lot of other campers.
Yeah. And so were there any trips that you were on that were particularly memorable for you?
In Tumai or overall?
Well, overall, since you...
I remember one through the Mahoosick Range, and I don't, I, maybe it was Den. It might have been Den.
Yeah, it was either Den or Panther, yeah.
Yeah. And I that was a really great one. I'm trying to think what are other,
You know who was around then is probably the Tripmaster in 73. It was either Jim Boycourt or Andy Poppinchock.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I don't remember. I early in my time at Mowgli, Andy was the tennis coach, which was, you know, yep. the tennis counselor, which was one of the things that I liked doing. But yes, right. I think maybe then, or maybe it was a year later, I don't know, that he was the trip master too.
Mm-hmm. Well, after Jim Boycourt left, Andy right. took over, but I can't remember exactly which year Jim left. Uh-huh. But the Mahoosicks is just an extraordinary trip, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is really. And actually, I think perhaps I remember it too, because I don't know at the time that I had read it, but, you know, sort of the saying the most difficult mile in the Appalachian Trail, just realizing that that's, you know, that wasn't just our experience. That's what everybody said about that mile or 2 months, whatever it was.
But looking back, you know, I find that the difference between an AT hiker, you know, an AT through hiker and a Mowgli man is that it's the most joyous mile of the Appalachian Trail for us. And they all complained about it.
Well, I remember the feeling of triumph in mastering it, whether it was joyful throughout. Yeah.
Right.
We'd have to go back to the tape on that one.
Yeah. Did you have a snowball fight in the middle of the knot?
I think so. Yeah, I think we did. Yeah. Uh-huh. Because that was also amazing. I'd never seen anything like that in August. Maybe July, but
yeah. Well, the only difficult thing about the notch was or about the Mahoosicks, as far as that's concerned, is that on both sides of the notch, it was a challenge going down and then going up.
Yep,
know?
yep. That's what I remember. Well, I also, and I don't even remember, I think it was just getting into the hike that the first mountain that we did, it seemed like it had, we thought we were at the peak like half a dozen times. It had,
a bunch of false. Or I sense. Did.
Maybe yeah. Everyone was not as convinced as I was. But right. So, but it was a great trip.
Do you remember much about any of the staff members that were there?
I remember a lot of people. Mr. Phil. Who else would I say? I mean, a lot of people. Gary Wright at the rifle range, and who else do I'm trying to think of?
Was Charlie Walbridge there in those years?
Yes, he was, absolutely. I don't know if, I think he was there. He probably was there the whole time I was a camper.
Right.
Yeah, certainly very memorable. I'm trying to think of who else, what other, I'm forgetting now. In preparation for this call, I did do some remembering, but now, it all slipped my mind. But
what were the Gehring brothers like as young men?
I guess one of the things that was striking is they were just, though very similar in appearance, they were so very different from each other, and they were, Lee being, much more reflective and sort of interior, and Chuck being, just a grab life as it comes, kind of much more someone who just took things as they came. And I don't think I'd ever known twins too, so it was they were great. I mean, I enjoyed them.
So you would have been around and on the hike when Chuck got hurt falling off a Shining Rock on Mount Liberty. Do you remember that?
I don't know what happened.
Well, there was it was a day trip. And I think Charlie Walbridge was one of the staff members. And I had taken another group up, and we kind of crossed coming down. And what I remember is that when I arrived down at the bottom, all of a sudden, Jim Boycourt and Phil Hart and a few other people came rushing in a van and said one of the kids had fallen on Shining Rock, and he had climbed up. I think there were actually two kids involved, and one of them, boy, I feel badly that I can't think of his name right off the top of my head. He was sometimes nicknamed Poindexter, but I can't remember his actual name. I feel badly about that. Well, anyway, there were two kids. They took a break at Shining Rock, and two kids thought they'd scale up the rock. And what happened was they just didn't realize how slick it was going to be. And one of them took a fall. That was Chuck Gehring. I won't say a fall. He slid. But he got hurt enough that he needed help getting down from the mountain that day. And
right.
And I saw.
I do not remember this. You're probably right. I probably was there. But
yeah. Well, who knows? Maybe they broke the dorm up or something.
Yeah. It's possible. Although I'm sure. Yeah. I would have thought that. Yeah. But. There a summer was filled with lots of events, and only a few of them still stand out in my memory.
Did you ever end up on Mr. Hart's porch for anything?
I don't know. I don't I don't think I did. I'm not sure.
Does that mean you were a good boy or you were just successful in, in your escapade?
I was reasonably good and certainly a fast talker. So
you were a fast talker.
Oh, definitely.
But it was one of the things I loved about you. You could talk your way out of almost any mess you got into.
Well, yeah, maybe it mildly, not subsequently.
Well, we'll get to that part in a minute.
You know, there are a lot of other counselors that I enjoyed, but I one of the things I remember is, and I don't know many of them very well, but there was a string of foreign counselors in the years that I was there, who were very interesting characters. Some of them were, you know, just incredibly great, like right. Copeland's, right?
Yes, was Greg Copeland's.
Greg Copeland's. But then they were just fascinating people. I remember enjoying and learning from them. Some of them were, you know, were not that comfortable at Mowgli, but it was still interesting having them.
Right, right. Well, Greg, you know, I've been trying to get a hold of him to do a podcast. Yeah. He's active on the Mowgli Facebook page.
Is that right?
Every now and then, a picture will get posted, and he'll comment on it. So it's nice that I think he was only there for a year, but he might have been there for two. But he was a particularly memorable guy for a lot of people.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. I mean, I don't really remember details, just that I, you know, found him, you know, it was interesting knowing him, and he just brought a lot somehow.
Yeah. At the time, he was from South Africa. He doesn't live there now, but
yeah.
Yeah, he was a really interesting guy. I'm trying to think of some of the. There was another guy named Lyons, who was from England,
Lyons.
But I don't know if that was the same year or not.
That doesn't ring a bell. There was a guy. I have no idea of his name. I remember his saying, "Will you quit your mucking about?"
That was, I think he was a crew coach, the guy
yes,
that you're
was
talking
Linwood
about.
Linwood or something?
Linwood, yes, something. That's right.
Yeah. He was actually not one of my favorite counselors. But I always do remember his irritable saying,
"Quit your mucking about."
Will you quit your mucking about?
Uh-oh, I might have to name this Mucking About with John Mukad.
Yeah, right.
Name this podcast.
Isn't it funny what you remember? I mean, but that was colorful language somehow.
Yeah. any memories of either places or things that you did that were, you know, that really stick out in your memory?
Well, not so much places, events, you know. I mean, the crew races were always amazing and, you know, joyful or intense and disappointing, and, you know, I'm trying to think.
Well, you were, I mean, there were plenty of races over the years that were sort of epic, but your year was, I think, particularly epic, and people still talk about that crew race. What do you remember about all that?
Well, I don't know what I remember is I caught a crab at the beginning of the race. I don't think I had caught a crab the whole season, you know, and it was, so it really threw me off. I think we recovered as a boat and still rode a good race, but that's the thing that I've always remembered and always felt like, I didn't row my best race. But also, you know, I think it was, it was epic partly because of, you know, all the big people in our boat and, you know, just sort of a superficial assessment of which boat should win. So, and, you know, I think the red boat was filled with very competitive, athletic people, and they did a great job. But it was very disappointing because we were really expected to win.
Yeah, I mean, the odds on you guys were exceedingly high.
Yes, but
and I have to say that I'm not exactly unbiased in this whole thing.
You were the crew.
I was the red crew leader yeah, that year.
Yeah.
So it was my job to get my
it's
guys.
It's surprising that I'm even willing to talk to you.
Oh, you know, there is some competition in the Mowgli world, but that is where it got most intense.
But
there was so much to learn. I mean, I lost both years when I was on the racing crew. And,
right. Yes, well, and wasn't one of them a blue sweep? That's the other crew year that I remember. I think that was my Aquila year.
It
was my blue year. But anyway, yeah, which was, you know,
right.
Very jolly for the blue crew.
Right. And in my first race when I was in Panther, we did have this incident where we kind of got the boat pushed into shallow water and slowed the boat down. Considerably. I mean, you could actually feel it physically slow down in the shallow water. And, you know, so there was, even over the years, you still remember.
Yes, right, exactly. As I think of the, you know, my little part in you know, the drama, which, you know, it's who knows how these things played out. But yes, heartbreaking at the time, but
yeah,
it's fine in the long run.
Do you remember what? Do you remember what ribbons you got?
I got yellow for tennis and what else? I got, you know, green and orange. I actually loved axemanship. I really enjoyed that. And what else? So I rowboating. Silver. Ah. Right?
So you were in the inner circle and where do you live now, John?
Cambridge, Massachusetts.
In Cambridge. Okay.
Yeah.
You went from Manhattan to Cambridge. I'm going to ask you in a minute how you ended up there, but we'll get through a few more things about Mowgli. Were there any favorite places at Mowgli where you just found yourself inspired or enjoying being?
I think actually Campfire might be one of those places. You know, it wasn't always great, but it was, there were, I remember a lot of, you know, presentations or just readings that I really enjoyed. The singing together is actually quite a beautiful thing and something that is not at all a part of my life today, but it's really, it's a nice thing to be part of.
Yeah.
So Gray Brothers, I think of that too.
The chapel.
A chapel. Yes, definitely chapel. Tetherball courts.
Right. It's a lot of touchstones when you stop and think about it, isn't there?
Yeah.
You got your yellow ribbon from Andy Papenchuk?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although it might, it's possible he had already moved on to the Tripmaster thing.
Right. Sure. I visited Andy. He lives out in Aspen, Colorado. I visited him a couple of years ago. It was really wonderful to see him.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh.
And so, and the other guy that I visited, I don't think you knew, Jim West, who I think he was gone by the time you came to.
Yeah, it's a familiar name, but right, I don't think someone, I mean, I think someone I've heard of, I heard of while at Motley, but not.
Yeah,
not someone who was there. And what did he teach?
He taught archery.
I see.
Uh-huh. Which he jokes about because, of course, he's Cheyenne. He was the son of Wapanaya. So I guess archery was in the family, so to speak.
Stereotyping.
Yeah, I know. That's why he jokes about it. That, of course, yeah. And he jokes about being on the Red Crew too. He said, "Of course, I was on the Red Crew."
Yeah, really.
Well, anyway, did you feel different when you were a Denite than when you were in other dorms because you were sort of the leaders of the pack?
You know, I don't really remember. Probably so. I think an interesting thing for me is, you know, some of my best years at Mowgli were after I was a camper, you know, being on junior staff. And I think I was only on the senior staff 1 year, but those were also really great years and years that I remember as much as I remember my camping time there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, talk about that. Talk about being on the junior staff and then on the senior staff.
Yeah, it's kind of blurry, but I had a lot of fun. I remember, I guess I was on junior staff when a cook left and Gordon Moore basically took over as the cook, and I was. And I worked with him, and it was interesting. I just had a lot of good experiences of fellowship in those summers, as I remember it.
Wow, you know, I had completely forgotten about that. And of course, Gordon went on to become a very well-known chef. Both he and Frank McClelland.
Right.
And I think they were cousins too.
Yes, they are. Yeah. I mean, in some way, I don't know how related, but yes.
Right. They're related to the Hume gang.
Right. Yes. Yes. I think I've been to one of Frank's restaurants, but I've never seen him. I knew him, but I didn't know him well.
Right.
Gordon, I knew very well because he was in my year and was a really good guy.
And then you were on the senior staff. What did you teach on the senior staff?
What did I teach? Did I teach? I think I must have taught tennis, I guess.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. No, I think you did. I was having a hard time remembering, but yeah, I think that you did. But you know, it's interesting that there's a lot of people who talk about their staff experience as being even more formative than their experience as a kid at Mowgli. You know, people who came to Mowgli maybe 1 year as a camper and then came back years later to be on the staff and, you know, talk about it with a great deal of reverence.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. I mean, I don't really have details, but I remember, having really just, you know, having a lot of fun and enjoying working with kids too. In a way that was fun.
Right. Now, did the junior staff have their own quarters at that time, or did you stay in dorms? Do you remember?
I think we stayed in dorms, but I don't know.
I think you'd remember if you were kind of quartered on the ping pong porch or something.
We weren't there. I don't remember. It's remarkable. I feel like I have some memory of these things, but a lot of the details are not readily accessed.
Well, I think in those days Bob Bankson was in charge of the junior staff, as I recall.
It seems right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
He'd work you guys.
Uh-huh. Yes.
They're the most underappreciated folks in the camp, don't you think? I mean, I don't know whether they still have no specific days off or anything, but
right. Yeah.
Sort of a hybrid.
Yes, right. Well, I mean, I think that is the thing, that there is an element of them being campers too, or nearly campers, or getting some of the, so I don't
know.
I think it certainly was not a rewarding financial undertaking, as I recall. It was just, you know, like it was a good thing to do, a fun thing to do, but not necessarily the way of filling your bank account.
So after Mowgli, what did you do? Tell us a little bit about your trek through life.
What did I do?
Where'd you go to school?
I went to Hamilton. Okay. Actually, there were a number of Mowgli at Hamilton.
I think Lee Gehring was at Hamilton, wasn't he?
Yes. Chip Smith, Frank Moran. There were I'm even forgetting. There were a lot of people, a surprising number of people, given that they're two tiny institutions.
Right. Did you see them on campus?
You know, I did, but I didn't see a lot. Like, I think you're right about Lee, but I don't remember him at Hamilton very much at all, somehow. I think we were in different years. I had skipped a grade, so I was probably a year ahead of him.
Yeah. Well, it's possible that I'm incorrect about that. I mean, I could have gotten him mixed up with Chip Smith, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't, I, was he, I don't know. What I did, actually, what, when you said it, it sounded plausible, but I'm not sure now.
Right.
I don't know. What
did you study there?
Philosophy.
Philosophy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, I don't know if you happen to have listened to it, but I recently interviewed a Mowgli man named Daniel Dennett. Do you know who he is?
Yeah. He's quite an important philosopher.
Yes, he is. And you know, I've been a big fan of his for years, and then I found out that he had been at Mowgli. So I was very excited to talk to him, and he was as enthused about his Mowgli experience as anybody that I know. You know.
Yeah. Cool.
And it was funny. I mean, he said that he became a philosopher because Colonel Elwell told him that he was a philosopher. So what have you done since then? Since college?
I worked on Mario Cuomo's first gubernatorial campaign, and then I went to work for his administration in a housing program. And that sort of set my career course. I've worked in housing and community development for, you know, 40 years.
Amazing. Huh. So, you know, I was scheduled to be the speaker when he was going to announce for president at the State House in New Hampshire.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. I mean, I was actually down there waiting to give
they
this
pulled the rug
barn,
out
barn burner speech. And,
yeah.
And all of a sudden, oh, sorry, he's not running.
He was a good talker.
Yeah. So did you have a lot of interaction with Mario Cuomo in those days, or?
No, not a whole lot. I had some with Andrew and, you know, people around him, but yeah, I was in a program that was in the Department of Social Services. Yeah. I wasn't in Albany. I mean, I was in Albany occasionally, but I wasn't right there all the time, you know? So yeah, I didn't have a lot of interaction with him. but it did give me a path, you know, so yeah. I helped with the startup of this program. And then I went back and got a master's in real estate development at Columbia. And then I worked for a couple of national organizations. And now I have a consulting practice, which I've had for nearly 20, well, I guess more than 20 years now.
So. Wow. I mean, in terms of when you were starting out, were there any programs or policy changes or anything like that that particularly stand out as important in your own personal development?
Well, I mean, you know, the program I worked for was trying to respond to the homeless crisis in New York. So it was trying to help nonprofit organizations build housing for homeless people. Mm-hmm. And so that the early 80s was actually a moment where that whole field was changing quite dramatically. And this program I worked for was, you know, a part of that. And on the one hand, I think we've, you know, the whole model of supportive housing and, you know, there were some important innovations and improvements, but, you know, we are still obviously struggling very badly with homelessness. And, you know, there have been several further waves of policy innovation, but still way short of you know, dealing with the problems in effective ways, I'm afraid.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then, you know, I've, so that was a moment where both homeless housing and nonprofit housing were taking off in new directions. And so I've been in the middle of a lot of change in the affordable housing field. I've been in the middle of the development of the community development finance field because I happen to be a lender at some of the organizations I work for. And actually one of the organizations I work for also something called Youth Build. So I was the program I worked for was one of the early funders of Youth Build, and then I moved to Boston to work for Youth Build USA when it was just starting. And wow. So that was you know, that's certainly something I'm proud of, and you know, it there are a couple of hundred programs around the country now, and I think they've done a lot of good work.
Yeah. It's funny that I'm actually surprised that at some point our paths didn't cross, or maybe we just didn't know that they had crossed, because certainly in my earlier years in the legislature, I was involved in housing, affordable housing, and I sponsored the bill that created the first homeless shelters in New Hampshire, and a tenants buyout first refusal bill.
First refusal.
Sure. So I was doing a lot of work in that particular area. And while I was mostly in the House those days before I got into the state Senate, but it was. So we were probably traveling in very similar circles those days. And what kind of stuff do you do consulting now?
I work, you know, mainly with nonprofits. Most of the organizations I work with do affordable housing or community development finance, but I work with a lot of groups that do education, and I do all kinds of things. I help organizations with transitions. I'm often, I think the thing I'm most often doing is helping organizations to think about and manage the financial side of their business. You know, so they're often working for organizations like Youth Build, where people are focused on developing young people or meeting a community need through services or through housing, and they're not always as clear about the financial side of the business. And so that's one of the things that I try to help people, to help organizations manage effectively, you know, to get more done and to be successful in the long run.
Yeah, yeah. Well, looking over sort of the long arc of your, well, not so long, shorter than mine anyway, of your
barely, of your it's life. Hardly worth noting the difference at this point.
How do you feel that Mowgli has played into the person that you have become?
Well, I mean, it was certainly an important place for me. And it was, I feel fortunate that I had several places where I was really well nurtured, where, you know, people really appreciated me and demanded things from me and, you know, just took care of me in a lot of ways. And certainly Mowgli was that in all kinds of ways, both the people that I particularly gravitated to and the people who, you know, pushed me to do things. And, you know, so it was a very good environment and a very good environment, of course, with in terms of relationships, you know. And for me, it was not the foundation for my adult relationships as it is for many people, you know. But I just don't have those connections with people from Mowgli. But that doesn't make it less important, you know.
Sure.
When I had those connections and how they helped me grow and, you know, gave me confidence and, you know.
Yeah, well, I would think that by virtue of the fact that you were a Manhattan kid thrust into the wilderness, you had to have gained quite a bit of confidence in sort of your ability to tackle challenges.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think that's right. And I think also it's just being in the different environment was itself just very helpful. I mean, even apart from all the relationships, that just being out of the city and experiencing another side of life was, you know, very instructive and powerful and good for me. Mm-hmm. And so, I really appreciate Mowgli. And feel like I had a great experience. And as you say, it was a great experience both as a camper and as a staff person.
Yeah, yeah. And do you still hike, or are you active in the outdoors?
Yeah, some, but I, you know, not tremendously. I don't go camping. We hike some. I certainly walk a lot.
Yeah.
The pandemic has actually helped me focus on the outdoors a little bit more, as it has so many people.
That's right.
But I think I'm certainly much more comfortable in the outdoors than I would have been without Mowgli. It's not, you know, a core foundation, but it is something I like to do.
Right. Yeah. Well, John Mukad, this has been a lot of fun for me. It's been fun to catch up with you and to see the important work that you're doing since Mowgli. You know, there's very few things that are more important these days than figuring out a way to tackle some of these housing issues that critical to our long-term best interests.
Yeah, agreed. Well, really fun catching up with you, Wayne, too. And this is a great project that you're doing. How curious to have such a detailed oral history of Mowgli. I mean, that's in effect, that is what your interviews are creating when set end to end.
Yeah, it's true. I was just thinking the other day that I got it. I mean, just the length of the interviews have to total well over 80 or 90 hours, and and that doesn't include all the production time and everything else that goes into putting it all together. But it's been a great experience, and I've enjoyed it immensely, and I've enjoyed immensely talking to you, my friend. So I bid you good hunting, my friend, and you take care.
Good hunting to you. Take care, Wayne. See you.
Take care.
Bye.
My thanks to John Mukad, Den of 1973. What a great group of boys that was. And I'm just giving you all fair warning. If I haven't interviewed you yet for Mowgli Memories, you're in my sights. Maybe we could even do a Zoom call where a whole bunch of you were on together. That would be great fun. The show notes for this podcast can be found at mowglimemories.blogspot.com, where you can link to the Mowgli website to make a contribution. You can also pick up some Mowgli merch. And if you're interested, you can click on over to my art website, WayneDKing.com, and go to the Mowgli section of the gallery and purchase a piece of original Mowgli related art, and the entire price of purchase will be donated to Mowgli in your name. Thanks for joining me on Mowgli Memories, and good hunting to all of the brothers and sisters of the pack, two-legged, four-legged, and birds that fly.